yes.org.
Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross, the host of Bayou de Beltway, KRVS Talk Show. Today, we are joined by Dr. Stephen Procopio from PAR, Public Affairs Research Council. Dr. Procopio was born in Staten Island, New York. He moved to Louisiana at a fairly young age, smart move there, and went to high school at the Louisiana School for Math, Science, and Arts, college at LSU, where he got a bachelor's and master's in political science. Went to Indiana, where he got a PhD in political science. Then he came back, and he's had a wide variety of jobs in and out of public service in Louisiana. He was on the Local Government Planning Commission for East Baton Rouge Parish. He was director of the Public Policy Research Lab at LSU. He worked for both Mitch Landrieu when he was lieutenant governor and Angele Davis when she was commissioner of administration. And he's been with Public Affairs Research Council for the last 7 years. And today we're going to talk about tax reform and the legislative session currently underway. Welcome to the show, Dr. Procopio.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always happy to talk about the exciting topic of tax reform.
Well, before our eyes glaze over, let's do that. Now, Paige Cortez said in February, the legislature is going to, and I quote, fundamentally change our tax structure. So now that the session is underway, is that the reality? Is the legislature really tackling some of the tough issues?
Yes. These are some very big issues. Now, they've been tried before in the past. Are they all of the issues that are plaguing our state? No. And will they all pass? Almost certainly not all of them. But there's, I think, a really good effort to take on some of the serious issues. I know that when the Senate president says they're tackling something, it's almost self-evident that this is going to get top billing. And it's the Senate president, and you get a lot of cooperation from the House, the Speaker. And also the money chairs, Chairman Bishop and Chairman Allain seem to have a plan, and they are moving forward at pretty rapid clip.
Yeah, I can't remember when the top four people in terms of the finances in House and Senate were so closely aligned about an agenda. Can you remember a time when this is the case?
No, not really. They have really gotten on the same page, and they have a plan, and they're moving forward. So it's, and if you think what they're doing is great, it's impressive. Now, I say, even with all of that, it's still going to be very tricky. Because of the way our Constitution is structured, almost all of these things require constitutional amendments. So procedurally, it's very tricky. They're going to need two-thirds votes. They're going to need a vote of the people. It's going to be very difficult. And then politically, tax reform is just a very tough thing to do. There's always someone that has an exemption that you're trying to eliminate. And even if you have the economists tell them, no, look, you're going to be fine, they still should be skeptical. And so you've got to overcome that and explain, look, overall, this is going to make our tax system better. And probably we need to talk about a little bit about what tax reform is. Tax reform to a lot of people means lowering taxes. And tax reform to some people means, increasing taxes so that we can pay for vital services. The core of what they're trying to do is neither of those. It's really simplifying the tax structure, which from PAR's perspective is exactly what they should be doing, what we should call tax reform. On the other hand, people that want to see lower taxes may not be as happy, and people that want to see higher taxes may not be as happy. So they have a needle to thread.
Interesting. in the old days, reform used to be, we're going to reform government. That meant we're going to do stuff that's good for our side, as
right.
opposed to those guys who were in there, and they're doing something that's good for their side. So in this session, now John Bel Edwards has said, or some people have said, that they would like this to be revenue neutral, however it comes out.
Oh, the governor has been explicit that this has to be revenue neutral. And I think people have rightly interpreted that as a veto threat. Now, because they probably need two-thirds votes anyway, that's less of a threat, but you still don't want to have to get two-thirds votes. So I think the governor has set sort of the broad outlines that says, look, I'm okay with whatever tax reform, but make sure you're not cutting into the budget with this.
Now, clarify something for me.
We don't really know what these proposals will do, although I know the authors are – many of the authors are trying to meet that request.
Clarify something for me. I had thought that you had to have a two-thirds vote to raise taxes, but you don't have to have a two-thirds vote to cut taxes. Is that correct?
That's correct, but it's so also getting rid of an exemption would require a two-thirds vote. And often if you have to change something that's in the Constitution, you require a two-thirds vote. So many of these bills are getting rid of an exemption and then using it to lower rates. So you'll often need a two-thirds vote for the constitutional amendment to get rid of the exemption. And then you'll need a two-thirds vote to change the statute that has the exemption. And then if you there's a third bill that lowers the rates, that in most cases won't need a two-thirds vote. But you're really oftentimes looking at three pieces of legislation, two of which require a two-thirds vote.
Wow. This sounds like not only is the legislature going to have its work cut out for it, but when this ends up on the ballot, the public's going to have its work cut out for it, too.
No, absolutely. And you know, I'll have you to be back on your show and talk about what they've done. And as you know, PAR always puts out a guide to constitutional amendments. And so we've got our work cut out for us, too. So that's, you know, we're tracking this. We've been tracking this anyway, but particularly with an eye toward how these things end up and how we're going to educate the public about it.
Now, just to make clear, PAR is a you're a nonpartisan public policy.
That's right. We're a nonpartisan, independent public affairs group. So we do policy research. We try to educate the public. You know, we don't really lobby. You know, we do take positions on issues. You know, but not often.
Not often, yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about what are some of the proposals being considered. Do you want to talk about the one that I'm hearing the most about is the personal income tax rate and this sort of complicated swap? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So there's a lot of proposals out there, but there's sort of two big ones. The big one is to try and reduce the income tax rates and the corporate income tax rates. So there's the individual income tax and there's the corporate income tax. And for both of those, you have sort of the rates set in the Constitution, but you also have a constitutional deduction that they can, anyone can deduct their, how much they've paid on their federal taxes from their Louisiana income for purposes of state income taxes. And that exemption cost the state, you know, somewhere close to $1 billion in reduced income tax, in all total, between individual and corporate. And so the idea is that, okay, let's eliminate this exemption from the Constitution and eliminate from statute, and then use essentially that $800-900 million to lower tax rates. And you want to do that for a couple of reasons. You want to do it, one, because we have just some of the highest tax rates in the country, and particularly in the Southeast. There's only, I think South Carolina has higher upper tax rates than us. So it looks very unattractive, even though it's not necessarily more expensive because you get this big deduction. Tax reform in general is about simplifying. So let's get rid of a deduction, and then let's also lower the rate, have a simpler system. The other reason you do it is that, you know, if you tie essentially how much revenue you're getting to the federal government, if the federal government changes how they tax things, it can affect how much income the state brings in. So if the federal government lowers taxes, then the people in the state are going to be paying less in federal tax, so they're going to have a smaller deduction, so the state government gets more money. And vice versa, if taxes go up at the federal level, that means the deductions will go up. That means there'll be a bigger deduction against the state income tax, which means our the state government's revenue will go down. So essentially, we don't even control our own destiny in terms of how much money we get because of the way the system is set up. And honestly, there's, you know, if a couple of these proposals happen, or just even some of the President Trump's tax cuts expire, the state is looking at less revenue long term because of the way we have the system set up.
Boy, that's interesting. I'm reminded of a teeter-totter with that relationship between the federal and the state governments. So as one side goes up, the other side goes down, or vice versa, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and though the thing is, we don't control our side of the teeter-totter. It's like, you know, there's a there's us on one side and there's an 800-pound gorilla on the other one. So it's whatever that gorilla wants to do, it's what's going to happen. We don't really control it.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here. The federal government is an 800-pound gorilla.
That's one of the most kind things ever said about the federal government. So I don't feel too bad about that.
Let me reintroduce you. If you just tuned in, we are talking to Dr. Stephen Procopio, who is a expert on taxes and many other things, word through his work with Louisiana government and, at the moment, the PAR, Public Affairs Research Council. So let's talk about this just a little bit. That was a fairly complicated proposal, but you explained it very, very well, I think. So the proposal would reduce income tax for individuals and for corporates, but it does that by corporations, but it does that by getting rid of the deduction. Now,
that's right.
Am I that people claim on their state taxes for federal taxes?
That's right.
Paid. But my question would be, who pays federal taxes? Isn't this mostly about saving more affluent people money?
Well, okay, so, and we have to be careful about this. So in general, this is affecting more affluent people, but it affects it on both sides. And so on the one hand, the more affluent people tend to get more benefit out of the federal deduction. On the other hand, their rates are going to go down, too. And since they're paying usually more in taxes, they get sort of a roughly equivalent benefit on the other side. So now we haven't seen detailed analysis to know exactly how this affects different people in different tax brackets. And you know, people are waiting on analysis. But similar proposals have been done in the past, and it roughly works out equivalent for most people. Not everyone. But, you know, the benefit tends to help. The lower tax rate tends to help wealthier people, but then also getting rid of the tax deduction tends to hurt wealthier people. So overall, this should balance out, roughly. Of course, roughly is what happens to somebody else. So.
Yeah, good point. So the top income tax rate in Louisiana currently is 6%, right? And it's a sliding scale. It's at 6, 4, and 2.
That's right.
Okay. And this would lower those, so you would pay less in state income tax because theoretically you were, you know, getting less of a deduction.
Right. And the proposal right now, there's actually a lot of proposals. There's a whole lot of agreement on getting rid of having a constitutional amendment to get rid of the federal deduction. But there's lots of different proposals on exactly how to structure the rate reduction. The main one right now, sort of the main proposal, would lower it from 2, 4, and 6 to 1.85, 3.51, and 4.25. So, and they're really doing that to try to come in at roughly tax neutral. That's why you have these very specific numbers. But there are other proposals that would have more of a flat tax coming in, you know, overall, instead of having three brackets. You would kind of, you sort of have a flat tax. It would be more around 4% overall, but there's also a 0% bracket. So if you pay under this amount, you pay nothing. Or income under that level would have a 0% rate. But then you would have a 4% rate above that. So it's a flatter tax. So there's lots of different, you know, tweaks that are going to happen. But I think those are probably the two large alternatives between a sort of kind of a flat tax and just start taking the rates we have now and sort of trimming them. And which one comes out, I don't know, and which one is necessarily better. You know, I don't know. There's good policy arguments on both of those.
Have you taken a position on that second proposal of a flat tax? I'm talking you, meaning PAR.
No, not particularly. What would we want to see is, you know, getting rid of the federal deduction and using it to lower rates. So we haven't taken a specific position on the flat tax particularly. And again, I don't want to overstate, it's not really a flat tax. Really, we have two brackets. It would have two brackets, and right now we have three instead of like one bracket. So, you know, for better or worse, people may want to see it flatter, and people may be or understand why we need a zero bracket kind of thing.
Now, we've been talking about effect on individuals, and of course that's important, but a lot of the context around tax reform is given in terms of corporation taxes, but also friendliness to businesses that are thinking of coming here and those kinds of things. So what are the proposals with regard to reducing corporate income tax?
So just a clarification, just because there's corporate income tax and individual income tax doesn't mean that one's for business and one's for people. A lot of businesses, the vast majority of businesses actually pay individual income tax. These are like single owners or partnerships or something along those lines. So a lot of businesses in the state are affected by the individual income tax. I don't want people to think that there's one group for people and one group for businesses. Corporation is for businesses that are incorporated in a particular way, such that they're, you know, they're a corporation as far as federal and state taxes are concerned. Now, they pay different. They have an upper rate of 8%, which is particularly high. And so basically the same thing would happen for those corporations. They would lose their federal deduction, but they would get a lower rate. And again, there's different proposals on what that rate should be. But it's sort of the same thing. They have more rates. I think there's more of a swell to try and move them to a more of a flat tax. Again, flat tax probably being two rates. But again, there's a lot of maneuvering there. That's probably where most of the work and detail will be, to kind of iron out those things. There's general broad agreement on the constitutional amendment of getting rid of the deduction.
That's probably good to hear. Now, the reason why the corporate tax simplification or changes are argued is often on the grounds of making our tax code simpler and attracting business. Has PAR done any kind of study that determines whether or not that's in fact the case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the logic still follows the same reason that you're doing it on the individual levels you're doing on the corporate. We have, you know, I think we have one of the highest upper corporate tax rates in the country, and certainly in the Southeast. You know, like I say, there's really only one that exceeds this, and they're trying to get it down. So in terms of the corporate rate, yeah, we're certainly on an island in terms of, you know, how high it is. Now, again, that's a little bit deceptive because you also get this big deduction. So you're not necessarily paying more than some of these other states, but you have this upper rate, which it's unattractive when you're trying to, you know, first introduce yourself, like, oh, wow, look, you have the highest corporate tax rate in any of the states we're looking at. But, again, trying to simplify it, if you have a deduction that's moving it down, why not just get rid of it and lower the rates and make it simpler for everyone?
Right. And, yeah, so we're getting bad press for something that we're actually not doing, so why not just simplify that?
And there have been just tons of people that have studied this. I mean, so PAR's looked at it, and we're in favor of this essential swap. You know, there was a legislative task force that looked at it and recommended. There was a separate study. I think Committee 100 brought in the Tax Foundation, and that was their recommendation. Separately, you know, Professor Jim Richardson has looked at this and said, you know, this is something that we need to really handle. So, I mean, generally anyone that kind of comes in and looks at this says this is a change we need to have. And now the issue is really in the details of what will the rate look like after we do this.
Now, there are two other areas that I think we could focus on. Let's talk about this centralized sales tax collection.
Yeah, this is another big issue. This is meaty stuff. I mean, along with getting rid of the federal deduction, in some ways this is, even though this doesn't really affect how much people are paying, so consumers wouldn't really see any change on their end from what's happening. It's not changing the rate at all, but it is a definitely working of our tax structure, and I think this will go a long way toward making things simpler. To understand, you know, back, you know, in the 80s, every single jurisdiction that had a sales tax collected their own sales tax, and so you had over 200 something sales taxes you had to remit to. If you were a store, you had to send your sales taxes to all the different places that collected it. And in the 90s, they came and said, okay, look, let's get this down to one per parish. And so now there's a single parish collector, or sometimes there's little commissions for small parishes that collect multiple ones. They will collect all the sales tax in a parish, and they will remit it to the sales tax people in those parishes. And that can be a sheriff, or oftentimes it's a school board, and sometimes it's a parish or a municipal government. This contrasts to the vast majority of the country, where it's basically collected by the state, and then the state sends it down to everyone. There's us, and there's Colorado that are the only ones that really have decentralized collection. Some degree Alabama. Alabama has some issues as well. But for the most part, we are definitely one of the few states that has a sort of decentralized approach. And the two drawbacks with this is, one, it makes it very difficult on the business. The consumers don't necessarily notice, but if you're a business that does work across parish lines, you have multiple franchises or multiple stores, then you have to follow all the different rules that everyone has. And they might even have the same law, but they interpreted the law differently. And if you work in any, if you are any kind of size, they are subject to multiple audits. Almost you're going to get audited every year if you're any kind of size. Most businesses are just like, yeah, we're getting multiple audits all at once. And you have to deal with different jurisdictions and different remittances. And it can be a real hassle on the business side. And they're not really paying the taxes. They're just collecting it from individuals who are making purchases and sending it on. So it's a huge bureaucratic nightmare for the businesses.
Well,
the other problem is with the Wayfair decision, this is one that said, okay, look, businesses from outside of your state now have to pay internet sales tax. But, the state has to make it easy on them. And one of the things that doesn't make it easy on them is having a decentralized sales tax collection. And so people are concerned that as we collect internet sales tax, we are open to a lawsuit at some point that could make the thing coming down if we don't come up with a better sales tax structure.
Well, everything you say seems to indicate that the state needs to get with all the other states and start collecting it centrally. But as I understand, I have two questions on this. One, how did we end up the kind of only state other than Colorado that does it this way? And two, are there problems in figuring out how that's going to be collected and how it's going to go down, and who's scared about this change?
Right. So you've asked the right questions. Like I said before, it was actually worse. Before, we actually had every individual, each jurisdiction. So, if you might have your city government collect one, you'll have your school board collect one. You might have, if you have a parks district, they might collect one, all in one parish. And so everyone got together in the 90s and said, this is unworkable. Let's make it simpler. And they actually moved to one per parish. So you went from, almost 300 to... and now we're just like more 300, but 300 different jurisdictions to just, I think, now 53 that actually collected. And so that actually was a huge reform, and that's great, but it still leaves us out of the loop for everyone else. And it just has to, the structure of the Constitution, it was in the Constitution, and it's been that way. And the origins of where it was before 1974 and how it got in there, I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
In terms of who would be... Yeah. So right now, the system that we have is in the Constitution, and it really gives the authority to collect taxes to the locals. And this is understandable. This is local taxes, and so they want to collect their own taxes. And I think that's a reasonable thing, and I understand that. They are very concerned about either the state taking their money, where I think more often what they're concerned about is the state doesn't give them their money fast enough. And it's one thing if the state floats some money because, we have a larger bank account and so we can manage our cash, do some better cash management. If you're a small town, then you need your money, as soon as possible so that you can make payroll. If you're a larger, if you're Lafayette, you can probably deal with, 1 or 2 days delay. But, you can't if you're a smaller town. So they're very concerned about that. They're very concerned about losing autonomy. Just generally, this is a large chunk of their budget. In a lot of other states, local government is basically supported by property tax. And we have relatively lower property taxes because of a lot of reasons. And so sales taxes make up more of their budget. So obviously they can care about it more. So they have very reasonable concerns. But they also, this is the first time, and this is why this is realistic, the proposal that you see now, the constitutional amendment, was actually, in broad terms, brought by a coalition of sort of local governments working on this, understanding that there's issues, and the structure of the proposal essentially follows what they proposed. So I think it has some chance to pass, where in previous years it really didn't.
It has some chance to pass, which, of course, is encouraging, I guess. But when it gets to the actual campaign to get it passed, are you going to get teachers out walking online and sheriff's department employees? Is there going to be a big pushback from the local people who don't trust, don't understand?
Probably from some of them. Like I say, the proposal broadly was basically what the local governments came up with. The speaker, Speaker Stecksnyder, he brought a bill to have a sales-like centralization last session. People said, hey, look, we don't really know what this is going to look like. We don't trust it. And so we said, okay, I'm going to change it into a study commission. And several study commissions don't go anywhere, but this one did. They brought all the locals to the table. The locals appreciated that. And they came up with a proposal to sort of come up with a sales tax commission that would have 8 members, 4 of them from the locals, 4 of them from the state. And they would collect all of the taxes. They would collect the local taxes. They would collect the state taxes. They would collect the out-of-state internet taxes. And they would remit it back to whoever is the appropriate person. Now, some of the details would need to be worked out in a bill later. This is just a constitutional amendment that would set up the state to come back with a bill. But even that bill would require a 2/3 vote to make sure everyone's on the same page and everyone kind of can understand it. So it's very complicated. I think everyone understands the need for this. It's just a matter of sort of trust building and making sure there's an appropriate structure to oversee it, and that you know, we talked about the feds being the 800-pound gorilla. I think the locals have that same concern about the state. That if they set up something, they don't want to get muffled out. And I think those are very reasonable concerns. And so right now the proposal, I think, is very fair. Obviously, it's a lot of details, and there's a lot of more details to be worked out. But the idea and concept is a good one. And the idea of sales tax centralization is something we need to do and something PAR supported for a long time.
Yeah. And I noticed that when it passed House Bill 199, when it passed by a vote of 14-1 in committee, which indicates that a lot of people thought it was a good idea, probably on both sides of the political aisle. Well, we're coming. We got about a minute left. So let's see. We already said the governor's in favor of most of this. Is the legislature going to take up the question of the 0.45 sales tax that's expiring this session, or are they going to push that off till later?
Not directly. There is only one bill that I know of that is addressing it. There's a Senator Peacock from Shreveport. His plan is to slowly reduce that amount that goes into the general fund and transfer it over to the state transportation fund. So the tax wouldn't go away, but it would be funneled into transportation projects, because we can't seem to pass a gas tax.
We can't.
So, but it would, his idea is that, but then since this would be phased over time, we can slowly absorb the impact instead of it being a giant shock to the budget.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that, I think, got out of committee yesterday.
Cool.
So that's, as far as I know, that's the only proposal out there that's really dealing with this 0.45 cents that's going to expire in a couple of years.
Yeah, with unknown effects except pain. That's what I'm predicting. We've been talking this morning with Dr. Stephen Procopio from PAR, Public Affairs Research Council, about tax reform. Thanks for joining the show, Dr. Procopio.
No, enjoy it anytime.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Did you trade in your old radio for a fancy new smart speaker? You can still listen to your favorite local programming anytime. Just ask your smart speaker to play KRVS or listen online at krvs.org.
How do you want to die?
A lot of times we're doing things to people that we wouldn't do to a terrorist.
Let's just keep her alive.
Paralyzing somebody when you put a person on a ventilator.
Turns out when researchers ask doctors that question, the answers they give are very different.
They'll turn to me in the ICU and they say, if you find me like this, kill me. And they're not kidding.
How Doctors Want to Die on the next Radiolab.
Coming up tonight at 9 on KRVS.
The University of Louisiana at Lafayette. This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette Lake Charles. Streaming